League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, here on a very short week, guys. Packers playing Thursday night football here in Lambeau versus the Tennessee Titans. That makes everything a little abbreviated and sped up as we head to week 11. Also got the first snow of the season here in Green Bay.
Woohoo! Not excited about that. I will say, though, that unlike Matt LaFleur, I did get to sleep in my bed this week.
I know, yeah. Matt LaFleur told us on Monday that he did not go home at all Sunday night. He just slept on the couch in his office, turned attention directly to the Tennessee Titans and that monster. He called him a creature at running back, Derrick Henry. And especially with the fact that it's going to be cold on Thursday night, you're going to see the Titans probably feed him just again and again and again. Speaking of first snow of the season, I didn't think about this being a big deal until I saw someone mention it on Twitter today, and I was like, oh yeah, I knew that. So Jonathan Abram told me on Sunday night after the game they're wearing their all-white Color Rush jerseys on Thursday.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it'll be a nice little look against possibly snowy ground here in Lambeau. That'll be fun. Before we kind of get into the game, though, let's just stop and address the news that came out on Tuesday. The Packers waived Amari Rodgers and Kylan Hill. Amari Rodgers, you hate to say it for any guy, but the writing was sort of on the wall. He fumbled his fourth punt return on Sunday. That is now two punt returns that have turned into points for the other teams. And if the Packers had lost versus the Dallas Cowboys, you could have traced it back to that punt return fumble. That was sort of on the wall. Kylan Hill, little bit surprising. Spoon, I know you have more on that. I'll let you get to that. But those were both 2021 draft picks. Amari Rodgers, a third-round pick. Kylan Hill, seventh. So less than two full seasons. Kylan Hill coming off an ACL injury. Less than two full seasons for either one of them, and now they are both gone from Green Bay. Mm-hmm. I mean, as we said, Rodgers was sort of expected, but that's still a third-round pick that didn't make it through his second season.
Yeah, and I think there's a little bit of accountability factor here that Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst want to kind of put inside the locker room. Amari Rodgers, by most accounts, was a great guy and not a locker room problem at all. But as his mentor, Randall Cobb, said, it's a production-based business, and you produce or you're gone. And it was time. They just might as well move on. And, for his sake, like Keyshawn Nixon was saying, some guys will just respond somewhere else better. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm playing my best football in Green Bay, and I was in, with the Raiders for 4 years. So sometimes change is just what helps a guy. So but he wasn't gonna, think about the dark cloud that's following him everywhere he goes. Right. Fans, punt returns, whatever it is, it was the right move.
I like how Rich Bisaccia put it yesterday. He said, I like Amari Rodgers a lot. He's a good kid. I like him a lot. Jersey number 8 has put himself and this team in bad situations. And at the end of the day, that's the cold, calculated business of the NFL, because it is about winning. Yeah. And when you've got a guy that can't do the basic part of the job, it means he can't do the job. So the writing was very much on the wall.
Yeah. And with Kylan Hill, he's in the bottom, 7 spots in the roster, 5 spots in the roster. He's coming back from an ACL. I don't think they were just very thrilled with his comeback and what he was had to offer anymore. And that happens. I don't know if it was, I don't think it was ACL related. I think it was just like another guy who needed a new environment. And Patrick Taylor, they'll bring up, I'm sure, is a better special teams player, very good special teams player. And maybe they want to look at Tyler Goodson. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time to throw him out there. And now I don't know what he can do on special teams. But, you know, if something happens to Aaron Jones, he at least gives them that second scat back kind of possibility.
I mean, they really liked him in the preseason, and we saw why. He could do a lot with the ball in his hands. So there are options there for a third running back. And with the punt return duties, we expect them now to go to Keyshawn Nixon. I mean, that could still change, but on a short week, it's not like they have a lot of time to train somebody new. For that matter, though, Keyshawn Nixon's never really done it before. He said on Sunday that was his first time back there. I asked him something
in the NFL.
In the NFL, right. Yeah. I asked him something today about punt returning, and he just shrugged and laughed and said, I don't know. Like, that was my first time doing it. I'm still figuring it out.
Well, he certainly doesn't know that you don't field a punt at the six-yard line.
Right, and he
said, he had a great quote about that,
To me, too. I'm wondering if he told us the same thing. He told me, he said, I think what Rich was upset more about was me one-handing it when I was running.
Oh.
And he said, but I was going to make a play, so I was going to bring it out from the one if I had to, and he was just going to have to be mad about it.
Yeah, he said, to me, he said, yeah, Rich is probably mad that I fielded it inside the five, which is interesting that he hasn't even talked to him about it yet. But he's like, yeah, but I made a guy miss. He's going to like that. So, he's a character.
He is.
But he is just brimming with confidence. I mean, and the way he caught the ball, while certainly not normal, is a sign of he feels his ball skills are just over the top.
What did Amari Rodgers lack?
Confidence.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's like more than anything. Like, what's the number one trait that you must have as a punt returner? It's not the speed. It's confidence. Like, it is a really daring job to field a football that spends 4+ seconds in the air, 50, 40 yards in the air, with guys running down trying to take your head off. You got to be blindly confident, and one guy had it and the other guy didn't. Yeah.
And, you know, the less time you spend worrying about whether you're going to catch the ball, the more time you have thinking about where you're going to take it.
Yes.
And that's what Amari Rodgers' problem was. You know, once he had to focus completely on catching the ball, you could just see it was, you know, okay, I got it. Okay, now let's go.
Right. There was always a second of hesitation after he caught the ball, between when he caught the ball and when he started running. And you saw just in one return from Nixon, he was already in stride almost. He had to high point it, but still, he was pretty much already knew exactly where he was going with that ball.
The great punt returners all field like second nature. Like, it's not a big deal. They catch it, and it's in their arms, and they're off.
I asked Nixon today if this could almost be a good case of not knowing what you don't know back there. And he said, yeah, because I can just go on instinct, you know. And he said, it's be like playing like kids in the street where I'm bouncing off cars.
Maybe. He need to not field the ball inside the 5-yard line.
And he did mention that too.
He needs to understand that in the cold weather, the ball's going to die or, you know, with an Aussie kick that it's, you know, going to flip a certain way. But at this point,
if he doesn't
can't do
the ball,
worse,
yeah.
You know.
And almost, look, in no way, and I can't make this clear enough, in no way am I saying that it's good to field a punt at the 5-yard line. That's like football 101. We all know this. But in some ways, like, it probably got their attention to see a guy willing to field the ball at the 5-yard line when the fumbles with Amari Rodgers are by far were the biggest issue, but it wasn't the only issue.
Right.
Another major issue was the guy, when he did have a chance to actually return, he fair caught all the time. He didn't take what was there because of the confidence. I mean, the first punt return Sunday afternoon was really telling of the other issue. When he the gunner ran past him, there was no one. He had a chance to make a return, and he couldn't. He couldn't get the ball. He bobbled the ball, and by that time, he only got a 2-yard return. That was when he actually tried to field the ball. So many times we saw him either run away from punts or just simply fair catch punts that were asking, begging to be returned. To see a guy actually return it or field it when he's not supposed to because he has that kind of confidence probably got their attention, because it was not just the fumbles with Amari Rodgers.
Right. And that's why I asked Rich Bisaccia on Monday, is that one of the things you like to see back there with Nixon? And, you know, as he's told us before, Nixon has a little dirt on the back of his neck. He does not lack confidence at all. Of course, they have a long practice day on Tuesday, essentially training camp sort of schedule with two practices on the Tuesday. And so Nixon will come out of it knowing a lot more if the job is his, which we presume it will be this week, and what to do on Thursday against the Tennessee Titans. Let's talk about the Tennessee Titans. When you talk about the Titans, you have to start with Derrick Henry. I mean, he is their offense. He is their game plan. Ryan, I'm going to let you get into Derrick Henry because I know you talked about that this week. But first, Spoon, let me just start with you. If you're the Packers offense and you know you want to keep the ball out of Derrick Henry's hands, that's a time of possession game. Do you just essentially keep, can you do what you did versus the Cowboys, where you have Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon touching the ball 38 times?
I guess you're asking me about the offense, about the Packers offense.
Yes. Can they control the time of possession? Can they run the ball like they did versus this Tennessee?
Tennessee is the number one rush defense in the NFL, and they are really tough. I mean, they hit. And, you know, I watched the Kansas City game, and they were punishing Kansas City anytime they caught a ball. They lost, but it was a tight game. And their pass defense stinks, so they're probably going to just roll the dice and say, go ahead, Packers, beat us in the air, and because you can't beat us running the ball. And it's going to be a great matchup from that standpoint.
I asked Adam Stenovich this week, you look at the box score, and I think universally we can all agree that that's the blueprint, what they showed on the box score. That's what they have to do every week to be the best offense they can. Why is it not so simple just to do that every week? And the first thing he said was, you got to be able to run the ball. So it's almost a pre-qualifier that to do that, they have to be able to run the ball. Whereas I think that, you know, what they did early in that Cowboys game, they would run the ball in second and eight. You know?
Yeah.
Like they would – it's a passing situation. They run the ball anyway. And they were daring them to pass, and they still ran the ball.
Yeah,
that's what they have to do.
Eight-man boxes like 60% of the time.
It can't be a qualifier of, okay, we can run the ball if we get production. It's they have to run the ball. You have to stay committed to it. You have to run the ball come hell or high water. It does not matter. You run the football. And they haven't gotten maybe against the Cowboys because they actually would run the ball on a second and eight. Maybe they finally got there, but they've got to really soul out and commit to that. We run the ball no matter what happens. That is what we do, and we'll see if they can get there.
They were running the ball in the fourth, down 14.
Yeah.
Because they knew they had to. Running the ball, of course, did open up the pass game for – and we understandably look at Christian Watson, but if you look at the box score again, like, the ball got spread around too, especially between the 20s. I mean, Sammy Watkins had arguably his best game in weeks. Alan Lazard didn't get the ball that much, but when he did, it was for – chain movers.
Huge play.
And he was open a couple of times in that game where if Rodgers spots him, I mean, the one that comes to mind is that sort of back shoulder to Christian Watson they kind of both misread it and it was incomplete. If you watch that, Alan Lazard's coming across the middle. I mean, they dropped him in coverage and he would have just zoomed right up the middle. And so, but, you know, you understand Christian Watson was hot and they needed to get the ball to him.
Yeah.
But it just shows you that, you know, if he's not open, don't forget Alan Lazard.
Yeah. Well, he made one of the biggest plays in the game on that third and one.
Mm-hmm.
Where he sold the RPO so well off the line. and just takes a quick slant, 36 yards. I mean, he's Alan Lazard's like duct tape. It's always good to have someone you need it.
Mm-hmm. I had a very interesting conversation with Sammy Watkins today about Christian Watson. And I don't know if y'all remember. I do because I was still in college or still covering college at this time. But Sammy Watkins coming out of Clemson was blazing fast. Man, he had some speed. And he said that, you know, one of the hardest lessons to learn was when to use your speed and when to pull back. And, you know, that Christian Watson has incredible speed. Sammy Watkins spent a lot of time with Tyreek Hill in Kansas City. He said Christian Watson is just as fast. And you look at those two body types, those are two completely different body types. You don't think that, but he said he's just as fast as Tyreek. And he said, but what I and the coaches have tried to explain to him over this past week is, like, you can't go 100% all the time. Mm-hmm. Because if you do, that's what causes the hamstring issues. And Sammy, and he said that's what caused his hamstring issues, was trying to go 100% all the time. And that, you know, Watson will go 100% in practice or put his speed at 100%. And coaches are having to tell him, like, pull it back, pull it back, pull it back. Because when you get into games, you're going to be adding 2-3 miles per hour extra just from the adrenaline. So essentially, you know, your speed can be a positive. It can also be a detrimental if you don't know how to use it.
Especially if you're in a game where there's 70 plays.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if it's a 50-play game, it's not that bad. But you go into overtime, you know, and it's a physical game and whatever. Yeah, you got to learn when to throttle down and when to go all out.
And, you know, he made the point, too. Christian Watson's 85% is still faster than a lot of guys' 100%.
Yeah. You know what I'm interested to see is if the Titans dare come up and just batter him at the line of scrimmage.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Dallas did, I have to go back and look a little bit more. Dallas did play some press against him. But in college, all he faced was guys like 15 yards down the field. And I'm really curious to see how he would react. Can he get off the line of scrimmage against, you know, some big physical guys who want to knock him around?
And that was something I talked to Samori Toure about today, still about Christian Watson. And he said, you know, Christian is fast enough that if he can get off the line, if there's no safety help, he's going to beat the DB every time.
Every time, yeah.
But, you know, Samori mentioned that 4th-and-8 touchdown in the fourth quarter where Christian Watson split two defenders. And he said, you know, they both played off. If one of them presses, does he get through them and score that touchdown? So he said, you know, as long as Christian can keep working on his get-offs on the line, he's going to beat any DB once he gets past him. He said, but I imagine teams are going to start pressing him on the line more.
You know what made
that
play?
And if that happens, leave Samori Toure open.
You know what made that play so mm-hmm. impressive, was the second touchdown, the 4th-and-7, was they were in a trip bunch right, and the corner covering Watson was way inside, total inside leverage.
Yeah.
And it's a crossing route. So if you're crossing right to left and you're going against the corner that's inside, that takes away the route drawn on paper. You've got to be able to figure out a way to still get open. You watch that play, 3 yards downfield, he cuts it up vertically. Instead of carrying it across, he cut and runs behind the corner and cuts it up vertically, and then he carries it across. Aaron Rodgers said after the game that was tremendous improvisational skills. I mean, that the one thing with Christian Watson's injuries and as a rookie not being able to stay on the field, everyone said that he's really good up here. He's able to take good mental reps, and the speed of the game mentally, he's been able to follow along, and he showed it there. That was a pretty impressive play for a rookie that hasn't played a whole lot.
And I'm thinking to myself, if that's Romeo Doubs or Samori Toure making that, Rodgers is just like out of his mind mad that they took it outside. But because Christian Watson can get to his landmarks so much faster than everybody else, now it's a good
move. That's what speed does for you. That's what speed does for you.
Yeah. So
that's what they need out of him.
Yeah, it was interesting. That was a hell of a move.
It was. It was impressive.
But, yeah, if he doesn't get to that landmark, then Rodgers is mad probably.
So that was all our introduction to Derrick Henry. Ryan, take us through Derrick Henry. How do you stop him?
Well, it's interesting to me that the Packers are going to face a monster, in at least in part of Matt LaFleur's creating. I mean, when you look at Derrick Henry's career, the first 2 years, he didn't have a 750-yard season. He was in a rotation. he was not Derrick Henry until midway through year three. I mean, you can almost pinpoint the exact night when Derrick Henry became Derrick Henry. It was a Thursday night game, December 6th of that 18th season, where he had 230 yards, four touchdowns, including a 99-yard touchdown run. The first 12 games of that season, he didn't hit the 100-yard mark once, which is unfathomable now for Derrick Henry.
There is someone who had a little bit of a play, a little bit of responsibility for him not getting all those carries. And I believe he might be coaching the Green Bay Packers right now.
And he still gets the same questions about not getting a lot of carries to his run game and his running backs. You know, I asked Matt LaFleur what changed midway through that 2018 season. He put it all on Derrick Henry. He said I think he made the decision to just one cut and go, which if you go back and look at that 99-yard touchdown run, that's exactly what he did. Derrick Henry made one cut in the backfield, which was the end zone because it's 99 yards, and he went. So I wasn't there in Tennessee. I don't know if it was Derrick Henry was a stud and they were late to recognize that or if Derrick Henry changed his game. What I do know is that you can pinpoint the moment when that happened, and Matt LaFleur had a front row seat because that was his first 1,000-yard season. Next year, he's got 1,500 yards, second-team All-Pro. The year after that, 2,000-yard season, first-team All-Pro. Matt LaFleur was part of that season as the play caller when Derrick Henry rose, and he hasn't taken off yet. And how do you tackle him? That's what I asked the Packers defenders all in the locker room. Kenny Clark said he's the toughest running back to tackle in the league. Adrian Amos said the only one he's had that's been harder to tackle is Adrian Peterson. Pretty high praise. Mm-hmm. You can't go high on him, not just because he's so tall and he's powerful at 250 pounds. He's probably got the best stiff arm in the league. If you go high, you're going to get stiff armed. It's going to be running to the football, a group effort, and going low. You cannot tackle this guy high.
That stiff arm is lethal.
Oh, it's incredible.
I mean, I've seen him just put guys down with one touch. It's absolutely incredible. And it's one of those all hats to the ball situations, correct, with Henry?
That's how they held him last time. Yeah. They were everywhere, you know. They just and you know, if I'm Joe Barry, and I hate to keep telling him how to run his defense, but he really does need my help.
Well, you have been helping him.
I have tried the best I can.
You're just a giver, Spoon.
I know. I give and I give and I give.
And you get nothing in return.
Right. Play a four-man front. Yep. You know, go with four defensive linemen and an outside linebacker and make them throw the ball. Do what you are doing. Make Ryan Tannehill beat you. Now, everybody does that. They bring a safety up. But to me, that would just completely change. You know, I know they're not a 4-3 team, but go to a five-man front or a six-man front, I mean, and, you know, either bring if Devondre Campbell plays, bring him outside. Do whatever you got to do, but they got to do something different.
I would think that you're about to see the most base defense that you'll see all season against Derrick Henry. You know, you said that they held him last time. Do you remember what his numbers were?
Yeah, it's like 23 for 98.
It's right? Incredible. But they did. Yeah. That's good.
That's holding Derrick Henry.
That's good. Like, that's actually, like, he's like the one back that I've ever covered short of Adrian Peterson. It's been on this beat since 2014, where you can say 98 yards, 23 carries, that's a good day at the offense for the defense. I'm curious to hear you, because I was talking with our Pete Doherty, Hall of Fame voter, about, you know, where Derrick Henry is. But Adrian Peterson, obviously, he was greater. But in terms of running backs that you've covered, where's he ranked?
Did you ever cover Bo?
Yes, I did. Actually, I saw him get hurt. His first hip injury, I think, was against the Packers. Barry Sanders was the best I ever saw. It was just nothing like watching Barry Sanders. I mean, it was just like, you know, the Benny Hill thing, you know. Where
better than Peterson?
I enjoyed Barry Sanders more. I don't think he's as good a receiver as Adrian Peterson. And Adrian Peterson got any kind of hole, and he was gone. Great player. But I still like Barry Sanders. Emmitt Smith, I thought he was a product of a really good offensive line constantly. Derrick Henry, I mean, just from a pure power, he kind of reminds me of like the guys from the Browns, Kevin Mack and Ernest Byner, guys like that. He's a load. Time will tell us, you know, whether he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's still got a little ways to go, but he is a talent.
He needs to carry them to a championship game.
Yeah, and.
I'm not saying Super Bowl, but at least AFC.
I don't think that matters with running backs. I think it's about yards.
Probably not.
And touchdowns.
It's more about quarterbacks.
No. Yeah, and I think that Derrick Henry is going to be a really fascinating Hall of Fame case. He's 28 years old. He's got 7,700 yards, 74 touchdowns, which is already more touchdowns than Eddie George had in his career.
Wow.
That's a lot of touchdowns.
Yeah,
that's,
and I would take him over Eddie George. Yeah. I would.
He might reach 10,000 before he turns 30.
It comes down to if you hit 12,000 yards and 100 touchdowns, you're a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Every running back that's ever played with 12,000 yards, I believe, is in the Hall of Fame, but he's 28.
Did he hit 2,000 yards that one season?
He hit 2,000
yards. Yeah,
to
me, that's probably locks you into the Hall of Fame. 2,000 yards is just,
you know,
phenomenal.
Being 28, that's old for a running back.
Yeah, it is.
But you do get some running backs like Adrian Peterson who can carry their career longer. If he's one of those guys, I mean, he's going to end this season at 8,000 yards and 80 touchdowns. He's probably got to have another year or two, I would think. But it's at 28, it's going to be very interesting with him.
I think he could play for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's just the nature of the position. You get close to 30, and those guys go fast.
The part that's a shame is that he's not going to play with all-pro quarterback or a franchise quarterback. Yeah. Tannehill's a nice quarterback, but, you know, that's not going to happen.
In terms of game prep, too, it should be noted, Tannehill is still limited participant in practice. He's up in the air a little bit with his ankle injury. Could be Malik Willis on Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know.
He puts that team on his back more than just about any running back has. I mean, Barry Sanders was like that, right? But, like,
yes.
How many running backs have we seen that – and that's one of the questions I asked the Packers defense in the locker room is, does it – not that it's ever easy – but does it make it any easier to know? You know exactly what the Titans are going to do. They're going to give it to Derrick Henry and run downhill. That's what they do. Adrian Amos said, if it was easy, he wouldn't have had 2,000 yards in the season.
Yeah. It just depends on, you know, can you whip their offensive line that day? Are you really good? Or, you know, and are you gang tackling? Or are you just a step slow and he's, you know, a step fast? So.
And, I mean – no Taylor Lewin, right? Didn't he go out earlier this season?
I think so. And they got a bunch of injuries all over the place.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could load up one side. Then Derrick Henry will just bounce it out.
Yeah,
so never mind.
You just have to be disciplined, and you have to tackle. Like Brian said, you got to tackle.
You know what the problem is for the Packers? They're 26th in the league in run defense at 140 rushing yards allowed per game.
Mm-hmm. It's not good.
So,
Derrick Henry
over
can
under,
get that himself.
Over under on Derrick Henry here. Like, do you set the over under at 140, 150?
I don't
get his yards.
Well, the other thing is the way you take him out of the game is get ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how the Packers won the last one. What was the final? Like 41-7 or something like
40 that? 41-20, I believe.
Yeah, something like that. So you got to get ahead or keep him on the bench, like you were saying about running the ball. Regarding their run defense, I was curious because lots of people have been ragging on Kenny Clark. So I went back and looked how many times he got doubled against Dallas. And it was really clear that McCarthy zeroed in on him and said, do not let him beat us. He had Zach Martin on him, who's a Hall of Fame guard. But he still doubled him quite a bit. I was really surprised how much they doubled him. I didn't. You know, with their offensive line, they got a good right side. I didn't think they needed to double him. So I don't know if that's an excuse, but it's sort of what teams are doing. And if they're going to do that to him, someone's got to come through.
Yeah.
Someone's got to be better.
You know what it is? It explains why Jerron Reed had 3 quarterback hits.
Yeah. Yeah, he got a lot of one-on-ones. Yeah. He did. And what are they going to do without Rashawn Gary? You know, I mean, they got to find a pass rusher. And Igbari, I like him. Mm-hmm. I think he's got a lot of potential, and he gets to the quarterback more than anybody else they got, mm-hmm. other than, well, even more than Preston Smith lately.
Mm-hmm. And I saw a play the other day. I went back and was just watching, and there was a play where they were down in the red zone, gave it to Pollard, and Igbari won his one-on-one against his guy and then came off of it and came behind Pollard and made the tackle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds cliche, yeah, but he's got such a good motor.
Yeah, and, you know, they might get Tipa back this week. Mm-hmm. He, you know, I don't think you want to have him on the field a lot with Derrick Henry on the field, but on third down, when Derrick Henry maybe is off the field, I think he could add a little bit of something with his pass rush.
While we've been sitting here podcasting, the Packers did announce that they signed Patrick Taylor to the active roster. So this is not just a game day elevation. This is a elevation to the active roster.
Was
so
he at three?
No. Right. No, Juwan Winfrey is the only one that if he's elevated again, has to be signed. I don't even know if Patrick Taylor been elevated.
Twice.
Was it twice? He was at his.
Well, no, they could have done it.
You can do three,
week.
So you could do one more. But this is, again, not a game day elevation. This is a signing to the active roster. So there's your third running back.
Yeah,
your
special
good
teams
special player.
Yep. Yeah. Well, when it comes to their running back situation, running back three is not going to matter so long as Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon stay
healthy.
Right.
They don't need to, like, get a third guy in the fold. They need to give those guys more carries and touches. So they've stayed healthy. So long as that's the case, running back three is going to be a special teamer.
Yeah, as long as they replace Amari Rodgers with OBJ, they're good. They're good to go, right?
That's all they need for this season.
God, I saw how much he's asking for.
How much?
And what was it for just this year? It was like $10 million this year.
$10 million? He can play like two games.
I think it was going to end up being, no, he wanted $14 million, and it was going to be, because half the season's over, it'd be $7 million. And I'm like, I don't know that the Packers have that in cap room. You know, you're going to have to sign him to a multi-year deal. And I think now I see every time I don't see the Packers listed amongst the favorites. So.
But he did say this week that they've called.
Yeah, they were going to check. No, you know they were going to check.
I think OBJ named three teams, and the Packers were one of them. I'm trying to remember who the other two were. Giants and Bills, maybe?
Brian Gutekunst calls just so he can say he calls, you know, sometimes.
I just thought it was mostly interesting that of the three, that OBJ mentioned the Packers.
Negotiating because everyone in the league knows that they need a receiver. So you throw them in there and, hey, the Packers got to have a receiver. So they're one that can't.
They're the ones ponying
anything.
Up.
Doesn't
mean
anything.
This is such a random aside. But when we were talking about great running backs and I asked if you had ever covered Bo. Kroll's over here on the side of the stadium. The Kroll's, have y'all ever been in there for a hamburger?
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. They have this like huge dedication at the front of their restaurant to Bo Jackson with his Auburn jersey. And I asked the girl that first time I went in there, like, why do you have that? And she said, oh, well, he must have been a Packers player. And I went, no, he wasn't. He only ever played for the Raiders. But besides, that's his college jersey. And she said, oh, you know what it was? He went to Ashwaubenon High School. And I said, no, he didn't. and
I had no idea.
And she was like, no, he must have. And I was like, I promise you, he went to McAdory High School in McCalla, Alabama. And she was like, no, he went up here. This is probably a girl in her like teenage years.
Wait, so she heard your accent and was still
and then doubted me on where
on
Bo
Alabama
Jackson went to high
history?
School. And I said, listen, sweetie, I promise you, because my cousin was his coach at high school. He went to McAdory High School in McCalla, Alabama. And then he played at Auburn. He played for the Auburn Tigers. And then he played for the Raiders. Why do you have that jersey in here?
Bo Jackson, Aaron Stecker. I can see how they get them. you guys look up Aaron Stecker. He went to Ashwaubenon High School and played in the NFL. But you could see how they get those two guys mixed up.
It just blows my mind. And, like, I don't even think there was, like, an autograph. You know, it wasn't even like, oh, he came in and signed something.
Maybe the owner. Or maybe he came in for a surgery or something with Dr. Maybe. Anderson. You know, because a lot of famous people come.
Bo knows Kroll's. Yeah. That is true. Oh, wow. That's good. They should put that on their sign. Okay, guys. Don't give me a score, but give me your prediction for Thursday.
Ooh. This is a tough one.
It really
is.
This
is a really tough one.
Because if you can stop Derrick Henry, the blueprint is there to win this game. But that, of course, is easier said than done.
I think it's a bigger challenge for Tennessee to come on the road. I know they're beat up. The Packers are fairly healthy. I think that's probably the number one factor why I might go with Green Bay. I'm kind of leaning that way. But Tennessee's such a tough team. That's what I'm going to be thinking about when I make that decision. But I'm leaning towards Green Bay.
I have no idea. No clue. Do I have to? Can I just say I don't know? Is that good?
Sure.
Enough? Here's
pick a 2020.
Here's the thing for me. I think the Packers could win this game if they played like they did Sunday. No question.
Yeah.
They play like they did Sunday, they will win this game. I've seen this team for 10 games. I can't, you know, the law of averages. I can't in good faith predict that they're going to play the way that they have one time this season, a second time in a row. I just don't have the trust and the confidence. If they start building on that, and that's who they become, and they stick to that, the stick-to-itiveness, then, okay, they can win their fair share of games on the way out, including this week, but until I see that, I can't go there.
It's hard. And, you know, this opportunity, this is their opportunity to get back in it. Mm-hmm. So if they win this game, then they got 10 days to get ready for Philadelphia, which just lost at home.
With a blueprint now to beat them.
Yeah, sort of. And
well, yeah. And let me rephrase that.
The Eagles aren't – they're 8-1. They're not juggernauts.
They're good. They're good. Really good.
They're not juggernauts.
I was about to say, never mind on the blueprint. Turning it over five times ain't going to happen every
time. I mean, as you know, I said after the game, it's – every team in the NFC is flawed, you know, except maybe you're right. Maybe it is the Vikings who aren't flawed. But
they're also the Vikings.
I went back to your article because I was going to share it after the Philadelphia loss last night. Like, oh, look at Spoon's article from Sunday night. And in it, you said every team in the NFC is flawed except for the Philadelphia Eagles.
No, I said they are the least flawed of all the teams, you know.
And I don't know. Jalen Hurts, Super Bowl quarterback, I don't know.
I agree. Nobody who's you go and
it's like the AFC last year.
You got to beat these guys. I think you still in the AFC. You still have to say Buffalo and Kansas City. You know, Josh Allen's not
playing
that great.
Last year's AFC at this point in the season, you didn't know who was good. It wasn't until later in the season that you really felt confident in the Bills or the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the NFC
this
year.
Cincinnati was. When did Cincinnati take off?
Not till late in the year.
Later.
You remember week 5, they lost that wild game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just – it's right there for them. Now, here's what's interesting is Washington winning is bad for the Packers because they're at 5-5. That Washington loss looks a lot better now.
You needed the Chargers. You needed the Chargers to beat the 49ers,
which didn't happen. But Washington might be in it. So
right now, every team in
is in it.
Right now, every team in the NFC East would be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's remarkable that the Packers are in second place in the NFC North at 4-6. Mm-hmm. Detroit all of a sudden is hot, you know, they've won two straight the division.
We spent a lot of time all season talking about how the NFC is just not top heavy at all. But do you know what happens in a conference that's not top heavy? There's a lot of crowd in that fringe area. I mean, there's a lot of crowd. There's a lot of teams there that the Packers – digging themselves out of this hole, have to sift through, and it's just, it's going to be tough.
The NFC East will eventually eat itself.
Yeah. The problem is they don't have signature wins against NFC teams. So they
the Bucs is not a signature win anymore.
Yeah, it'll help them if the Bucs don't win their division.
They're going to be a division winner.
Yeah, they might be a division winner. I mean, they have to, if the Packers have any chance, beating Philadelphia would certainly help, but they don't have to. But they got to beat Minnesota, and they got to beat Chicago, and they got to beat Detroit. I mean, they have to take care, and they got to beat the Rams.
They got to beat the Rams. That's the most important one, because that could be a wild card.
Yeah, I mean, they have to take care of those NFC games, and those aren't going to be easy. Chicago down there is going to be a rough one, and, of course, Minnesota will be a tough one here. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of football to play still, Cassidy.
They've got 7 games left. How many losses can they afford?
2.
I would say, it could be 2.
Because then they would finish 9-8.
Yeah, I think that would be.
And it would help if that's against Tennessee and Miami.
Or I think it would help more if it was against Philadelphia and. Oh, you're talking about the losses. Yes.
That would help. But if you look at it realistically, losses, all right, at Eagles Sunday night. And then they almost have to split the Vikings-Dolphins game. Because I think the rest of those games they can win. But those are going to be – Rams here at home, they should win that game. Titans.
Late December game.
They can win that game. But here's the problem with 9-8 is that crowded fringe playoff field. And to your point, not having a lot of wins against the teams that they're competing against there. That's going to – I don't know if 9-8 does it.
And what if we're sitting here – Thursday night and they lost to the Titans. So are they done?
Well, I
no,
done,
I so. Don't I don't think they're done if they lose to the Titans.
I think their only way to come back would be to beat Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, that's the qualifier there, is that if they lose to the Titans, they still have to beat Philly. I just felt like they had to split these games and they at least got one win under the belt with Cowboys.
Yeah. I think you both said that, didn't you?
I will do a lap around Lambeau Field in January shirtless if this team makes the playoffs. I don't see it happening.
Mark it here. This is when he said it.
I'll do it.
I
could be wrong. I could be completely wrong, but they dug themselves a really deep hole.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that bet. I'll run around if they do it. No.
Let us know how it goes, Ryan.
Yeah, right.
It's not like it's backers. It's just math.
I asked Alan Lazard last week if he has started doing playoff math, and he said, I play football. I don't do math.
Yeah.
I don't do math.
Yeah, I don't do math either. I had struggled with a simple math problem the other day. Anyways, as we said, short week. We'll be back here on Thursday night to cover the Packers versus the Titans for you. Win or lose, we'll have it covered for you from beginning to end. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage. Make sure to follow Spoon's live blog before and during that game as well. Thank you, as always. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.
Green 19!
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.